Welcome to Experience University, where we aim to educate, inspire, and empower individuals who wish to design transformational experiences. Now your host, Dr. Kristen Malik.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our next episode in season 8 on Experience University podcast. I am so excited for this one. And no, I don't say that for everyone, almost everyone. But today we have Victoria Mady on the podcast. And I have had this scheduled for months. Victoria and I have tried to connect literally for months now. And I'm so pumped because today is all things psychology. So thank you so much, Victoria, for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great we finally met up.
I'm so excited. We've already been talking for a bit. We could totally geek out on so many psychological things. I know you've been a consultant, full-time consulting for a long time. Give everybody on the podcast who's listening, all of our event and experience design professionals and students also who are studying event and experience design, tell them a little bit about what you do. Because when people hear meeting psychology, they might have no idea what that is.
Right. So I'm an event psychology advisor. And when people hear psychology, you're right, it might be confusing for some. And a lot of people think that I'm an academic researcher, but I'm not. I'm very much a practitioner who applies research to experience design to events. And I've got 20 years in events. I've been an event planner myself, but that's complemented by my passion and exploration of behavioral science and psychology. And I study scientific concepts and analyze research, but always with a practical lens. I used to say that I translate these insights into events language, into actionable strategies, practical takeaways, specifically for event professionals, event owners, industry partners, because I feel like this is important to make science approachable and applicable to event design. And again, this distinction matter, I'm not a researcher, I'm a practitioner. And, you know, in short, I would say I build bridges between the knowledge of human behavior and mind and the practical world of events.
I absolutely love that. And that's why we get along so well, because we're both translational in that way. In fact, so many of the government grants now within the United States, but also worldwide and some of the EU type of credits, they require this translational part, or a translational researcher or a translational practitioner. So we're both like right there with that. Like, let's apply it. Let's get out of the theory and like actually apply it. So I don't know any of your answers to these ahead of time, which is rare because most of the time I get on and I'm like talking to all. So I have no idea where this is going to go. And I am I'm living for it, Victoria. I'm so excited. Season 8's all things interviews. And one of my favorite ways to start the interviews, I like to take people from like, what do you think that people are doing, quote unquote, wrong, all the way up to the future. So we're going on a journey together. So obviously, we don't live in a dichotomous world. There is no right. There is no wrong. Everything's a scale. I will say wrong just for the benefit of everyone who's thinking of that. But if you had to list one thing in your opinion and experience that event or experience professionals are getting, quote unquote, wrong right now, what would that be from your opinion and experience?
Yes, I think chasing that next shiny big thing instead of experimenting is one thing that I think is wrong. You know, what I've seen many times in the past is that organizers follow the trends. We've heard that breaks and wellness are a thing now, it's popular, or everyone else is building a community, or personalization is what people respond well to. So whatever the thing is, we need it to. It's kind of that approach. But then it turns out that breaks are not designed properly to make a real difference, right? That personalization is more about bombarding people with messages that fake authenticity. I recently had a LinkedIn contact who sent me an invite to their event and a personal message on LinkedIn. And I replied. I got interested. I had a comment and I replied with a question. They never responded back to me. Never. Why? Well, I guess because that person didn't mean to start a conversation in the first place, right? But they were interested in getting me to register through a personal message because, well, oh, personalization works. But it doesn't work that way, right? You know, another example with communities, everybody is building a community with the event. But then we see that communities are still dead for some events. And it becomes even more frustrating for people who join because they were expecting some meaning out of it, right? And I think instead of, you know, following what others do and following the trends, event organizers need to try things out and see what works for them because every event is unique and it's more about context, right? That is specific for that specific event. We need to see what works for your audience, for your event, for your context, and keep things genuine. And yeah, and I mean, experimentation mindset sounds scary. Mm-hmm. But in fact, if you start small, then benefits can be huge. I'm sure every event planner knows that details matter, right? We talk about it all the time. So if you add a bit of psychology to that mix, you don't need massive resources to see big changes. I talked about this example on several podcasts already, but I really like it because it's a great one to show how simple it can be to change the usual thing, way of doing things and get huge advantage out of it because it's based on science. So the example is to ask for advice from your audience instead of feedback. Mm-hmm. And it's just one word that you change on your survey, asking for advice instead of feedback. But it's a powerful shift to the whole concept or idea of getting feedback, right? So people perceive it in a different way when you ask for advice. Another example that comes to mind is about swag ideas for attendees. The question is like, to be or not to be, right? And then the second question is what it should be to be effective. And lots of organizers, you know, think about it. And lots of ideas that come to mind first is about how to wow participants with this swag, right? But what if instead of giving something to attendees, you give them something that they can give to someone else, right? Research shows that we actually feel happier when we give something to others. It's a slight tweak, but it makes attendees feel good, better, because they bring joy to someone else, right? It also turns swag into a conversation piece about your event. It's a win all around. I remember I attended a trade show and I was so pressed. I didn't have time. It was a new city and I was away from my family, from my kid. And I promised her to bring something as a souvenir from that city. And I realized that I'm only within this trade show. I didn't have time to shop and, you know, look for gifts for her. And then I saw it was a PCMA booth and they had soft toys. Mm-hmm. So I brought her that toy from that business trip. Mm-hmm. And she loved it so much. And I felt good about myself. I was a good mom. You know, I completed my promise. So it was good for myself. It was good for her because there was a gift that I promised to bring her.
So was it also funnier? Was it because I think I might have gotten the same soft toy from PCMA?
Yes, it was.
Yeah,
it
was. My daughter loves it. And I did the exact same thing. Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
But the interesting thing that the legacy of it lasted even longer because I recently made a piece, a content piece about event marketing, and I provided this as an example in the article. But my daughter back in time, she was 5. She loved it so much that she made a drawing of it. It was really, you know, cute and nice. And I used that drawing in my article, and that was for the Korean publication. That PCMA toy, you know, was brought to the attention of Korean MICE professionals years later in an article about event psychology as an example of how it can be, this kind of tweak can change things, can change perspectives, yeah, and can become a memorable object. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good example of how small changes lead to big results.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I absolutely love that. I have never heard that concept in particular before. I was planning an event for event professionals during COVID on how to plan effective hybrid events. So a little meta there. And I just asked them flat out, I said, what is the best swag item you've ever gotten? And it was a fill in the blank. So there was no pre-selected choices. And overwhelmingly, like over 85% of event professionals to this event said pens. And so me and my team were sitting there like, okay, like a good pen, but that's so subjective. So what we ended up doing is we got 10 different like donors to donate their pens. And then we did a pen competition. And so every single person got all 10 pens and a scoring sheet. And then they got to write. And then we awarded like the best pen. We had a trophy for the sponsor for the best pen. And then everybody got 10 pens. Or what we actually saw happening on the floor is they were trading. Like, oh, you like that pen? I like this pen. And they were trading. So then they got multiples and it was all branded and it passed on, which was great. And then we didn't actually have to pay for any of it. Right. Except
the right.
But I love your idea of like getting a gift for somebody else. Cause that's what I do. Like at Expo in December, like I just walked around the trade show. I got all the candy and all the things and that became my daughter's like stocking stuffers, right. For Christmas. So it's so true. Yes. Just haven't thought about it that way. Oh, that's so good. Okay. So then, you know, perception is projection. So we always think of things or provide advice from our personal perspectives and our personal background. And this really came home to me when I was at an event, a continuing ed event, and this breakout was talking about what are metrics to evaluate community? And nobody in the room had any answers. And then I was like, well, that's odd. People have been building communities forever. And then I was at a separate event like 2 months later, same session, same conversation. No one was raising their hands. And I was like, well, we just don't have the right people. You're not asking the right people, right? Everybody in this room needs this information, but we have to go to a different industry to get that answer. But nobody was pulling in the other industry. So I'm asking this question very specifically to you from the psychology standpoint, because you're going to have a different viewpoint than everybody else. From this psychology standpoint, what are things that most meeting professionals don't even have on their radar that they should have on their radar?
A couple of things, but I'd like to highlight this one, observation, as a way to get better quality feedback and as a way to get more insights about what people feel in relation to your event and what they think about the event. And I think observation is so underrated. We are obsessed with data and surveys, which is fine. I'm not advocating for doing things just one way or another way. I feel like we should not rely that much on surveys as we do now, because asking questions is enough only if you assume that people are rational and they make perfectly logical decisions, right? They aren't, and they don't. And that's actually the major takeaway from research, from scientific studies. But watching what people actually do, on the other hand, will get you one step closer to fixing your event issues, to discovering some original solutions, out-of-the-box solutions. And you should mix surveys with observations to achieve those true insights. And I've recently had a conversation on LinkedIn. I think it's Phil Marchand who posted about secret attendees, and he asked the community what they think about it. And I posted a comment saying that, you know, in the early stages of my consultancy, I offered this as a service, you know, to be a secret attendee with my experience as an event planner, and also knowing that observing people actually provides you with more insights. But I realized that the industry was not ready for that. And I hope that we are getting there right now, because there is so many more discussions on things like intangible KPIs, psychological safety, you know, science-based solutions and tools that help create truly meaningful experiences, right? So I think we should look at this secret attendee idea, pay more attention to this idea, I would say, because again, it provides you with an opportunity to observe people in the field, like in reality, and see what kind of things they really do. Because people can say all they want, but there is this intention-action gap from psychology, from behavioral science that I'm sure you know about. And it's true that we say one thing and then we do another thing. And it's not because we lie or because we want to mislead someone. It's just because it's human nature. So observation, yeah.
Yes, no, I'm glad to know I'm not the only secret attendee. Yeah, I was actually built it on a grant that where all I did was go around to 24 different events and I was a secret attendee and then I reported out. It was really fascinating. But yes. I completely agree with you. It's taking a long time to get the event industry to that perspective where they're like, yes, I'm ready for that. I'm ready to pay for that. I'm ready for that direct feedback, right?
That's true.
So future pacing, because obviously we've already been talking, we could talk all day. And I'm sure every single person on this podcast that's listening would benefit so much. They could hear you talk all day. Okay, so before we go into the third question, how can people interact with you? Like, you have so many great resources. You have like a course and you have like a club, like a networking group. Tell people about these things so we can continue the conversation. And then we'll get to like our last question.
Right. So if you want to reach out and you need some tailored advice, then you can email me, you can contact me on LinkedIn. Obviously, you have all my contacts on my website, meti.events. But then I do have two things that, you know, your listeners might be interested in. One is the Event Psychology Lab. This is a on-demand, self-paced course. It's short, but it's comprehensive because I cover basic psychological and behavioral science concepts and practical application to events. So it's designed specifically for those who is starting out with the event psychology approach and doesn't know much about it. So I provide, you know, case studies, a lot of examples and references to research. If you need to convince someone else, you know, on your team, then you have, I've got you covered. You've got all this research cited, so you can go back and check it and show it to someone else. And then another thing is the Event Psychology Club. And this is a community for those people who are already familiar with the approach and want some deep dive. I provide exclusive content to the members of the community, content that I don't share anywhere else, you know, links to studies, white papers and reports that are not mainstream videos. And I do provide a lot of ideas that I'm thinking about myself, and I share them with the club members. I also share a podcast, the Event Psychology Podcast episode recaps there. We host online meetups once a month, and there is a one-on-one monthly catch-up with those on the Best Friends for Our tier. So you've got a lot of things if you join the community. So if you're interested, please do join. So those two things that I would highlight.
Absolutely. And I will definitely make sure all of that's linked in the show notes to your website and your LinkedIn and to all of the things. And I'm like signing up for the lab, like after I get off the call today. Like I'm so excited. Even if it's stuff I already know, it's fascinating to have the case studies and the links and the research, you know, all the stuff that AI is not good for. Like valid research and valid links and references to take to your boss when you're trying to support a change or arguing, right? In that way.
Yes, it's an important one because I know from my own experience, event planners have a lot on their plate, so they don't really have time to dig deep and, you know, find this justification or another link, another reference to convince their boss to, or team members to implement some small change. So this is actually, this can help in cases like that.
Yes, for sure. So then from your perspective, what does the future hold for events from your perspective? It could be super psychology, it could be not. Like, what's the future of events from your perspective?
I love this question. A few years ago, I dropped a blog post on my website called "Are We Ready for Event Neuroscientists?" I feel like it's still really, really valid and sort of, it was my cry, you know, for them. Radical idea of involving a human behavior and mind expert on the event planning team. And it seemed really crazy at the time. It was, I don't know, 10 years ago, maybe, right? And fast forward to now, and I know there are a lot of people who are like-minded, who believe we need more neuroscience and behavioral science and psychology in events. And I myself been fortunate to work with those people, some of my clients that are have the same understanding about, you know, applying tangible concepts to event design and going psychological instead of logical with their solutions, right? It's not a common practice yet, but it's a huge difference compared to what I've seen a few years ago, right? And I think that the future holds the role of chief behavioral officer, because it will become standard. And I'm confident about that. Events are something more than just moments in time where people meet to have fun and do business. They are a catalyst for behavior change. And they have always been. It's just that event professionals didn't quite realize it, but now they are. And that's why, you know, we've got, I personally know of a few companies that already hired people with psychology degree on their team. We know that there are a lot more discussions around topics like belonging, psychological safety, emotions, you know, well-being, all those things that are tied back to how people behave and how they think. And so we are starting to design events for how people think. And for that, you need to have an expert on the team who focuses on those things specifically. So that's what the future holds, I would think.
That's good for you and for me. I mean, with our background, right?
Oh, yeah. The future is bright.
And we have so many people all around the world that listen to this podcast and sending LinkedIn messages and asking for specific content, which is what season 8 is all based on, is I want information in this area. Like, I think the one that's releasing before you is in LARPing, like Nordic LARPing. I'm like, okay, you want Nordic LARPing? I'm giving you Nordic LARPing. So to anyone listening to the podcast today, if you have an idea of something that you want to hear as applied to the event or experience design industry, shoot me a message on LinkedIn or via email, and we'll make sure to have an episode on it. Victoria, what is one piece, one thing, if anybody listening to this call is to take one thing away from this entire conversation, which is so fascinating, that one practical nugget that they could apply, what would that one thing be?
I would say, look where others don't. I mean, you know, if everybody highlights that they have a jam-packed agenda, don't do the same. It's actually counterproductive and it's not going to help you win more attendees, right? You know, if everyone else does 1-hour keynotes, don't. Don't if your audience is skeptic about it. I talked to a fellow event professional recently, and he shared how they reduced the length of sessions. And a lot of people in the audience were not happy about it when they announced it before the event, but they changed their mind when they actually experienced it. If I might add another takeaway here, because it leads to another thing that I'm thinking about a lot, that you as the organizer need to educate your audience. Because it's a two-way street. Yes, organizers have a big chunk of responsibility about the event, but participants are also responsible for the outcomes of attending the event. But because, you know, we humans, we are wired to avoid cognitive effort. We are irrational. We are, you know, we tend to forget things. These factors all affect our behavior. You know, you can get the best app ever for your people, but they won't download it, right? Or you can have you can design the most interesting and engaging networking activities, but they won't feel comfortable doing it because they need some extra help and education, prep, right? So guide them, provide them practical guidance with about your event before and after it, and also explain things where possible, why you do the, you know, in a different way. And that way, by guiding them through it, you make it a successful partnership for you as the event owner and for your audience.
I love that so much. And, you know, you and I were talking before we even recorded the podcast of, like, I have been asked so much recently to do all of these artificial intelligence, like keynotes and breakouts. And there's so many great AI speakers, like, you know, Nick Brelli, love Nick, if you're listening, love you. There's so many great AI speakers out there. But one of the reasons why some people are choosing me as like the precursor to someone like Nick is that I do talk about the psychology and the neuroscience for the whole first half of my presentation to get the mind open, the neural pathways open, to explain that in a very, very friendly way, and then get their mind open into the AI and the potential and possibilities of AI. And then if someone like Nick or another great AI speaker after who's much more logistics, or look at all the possibilities within our field or our industry. I mean, that's a perfect matchup there. And it's exactly what you just said. You have to pre-frame, you have to lay out the road, you have to explain things. I absolutely love everything you said. This may or may not be my longest podcast episode of the season, but it was so absolutely incredible, Victoria, to have you on. I could talk to you literally forever. I wish that I could. And thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Well, for everyone who's listening in, stay tuned next week for another incredible episode. We're coming close to wrapping up. We always do 12 episodes a season. I believe this is episode 9. So we've got a few more, and then we'll be rolling into our break before season 9. Thank you so much again, Victoria. And I will talk to everybody soon.
Thanks for listening to the Experience University podcast. Stay tuned for our next episode.